Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I will be damned if the same politicians who refused to act then are going to try to come back today.
The real content of any kind of revolutionary thrust lies in the principles and the goals that you're striving for.
When the powerful use their position to bully others, we all lose.
A system of justice will be the richer for diversity of background and experience.
Hello, her.
Correction. Hello, everybody. It's me, Miss Cracker. I'm here with my co-pilot, Caitlin, and it's time for She's a Woman. It's a podcast for every human being who looks into the mirror and says, she's a woman, and for the people who love them. Every week, even when we're on tour, Caitlin, we talk to incredible women of all kinds from all walks of life and invite them to share their stories with you, our incredible listeners. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. Caitlin, we are neck deep in this tour and we've got a lot of great experiences under our belt. Mm-hmm. What have been some of your favorites? Because I know what mine are.
I think for me, my favorite experience, if this counts, is just having other women
on a
tour bus.
Yeah.
I feel it just changes the whole tour.
Mm.
And I feel like this is an appropriate place to talk about that.
How does it change the tour?
For me, it's just solidarity of having somebody else on a bus that is female.
Yeah.
That it's just different. I don't know.
Do you feel like you are listened to more?
I feel like I'm listened to more. I feel like I'm taken more seriously. I feel like on a tour with a lot of men, well, gay men, I guess, because let's be real here.
Yeah.
They only care about what they can sleep with. And as me, a woman, maybe on a drag tour with a bunch of gay men, I'm not taken as seriously or, you know, just not seen as important because I'm not a cute twink or whatever.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. Absolutely. And we are on a lot of those tours a lot of the time. And this is a special treat for everyone listening. We kind of discussed this a little bit last week. But there's a crew of six people besides me. And four out of six of those people are women.
Yeah.
And it makes for a really special environment and something that I think really is in line with our values. Also, a lot of people that work on this tour don't just come from the drag world. They come from the music and entertainment world, which I think also makes a difference.
It really does.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts about this tour is that everyone has a decade of experience.
Yeah.
Or more. Forget drag touring. They were doing this long before drag touring was even a thing.
I know. They don't care about drag queens.
Yeah. They're like, okay, they care that they're touring an artist, but they don't care what kind of artist it is. So, it's been a really magical experience, I think, for those reasons. But also for me, just doing shows has been spectacular
again. Yeah, just being able to tour again is really nice. And being able to be like, I do like going to new cities and walking around.
Yeah. And vintage shopping, which is...
Yeah, that's another one of our good experiences. We've been making out like a bandit.
Yeah.
Except paying for it.
Yeah, we're like...
You can't beat the vintage stores and antique stores in the Midwest. You just can't.
No, they're so incredible.
They're huge.
We got Caitlin a little pink Cadillac.
We did.
And a Barbie.
I'm so excited.
And I got myself a little train set for God knows what reason, but it's adorable.
And a cheese and mouse salt and pepper shaker.
Yeah, I got myself a salt and pepper shaker set where the pepper shaker is a mouse and the salt shaker is a cheese. People don't understand. If we were really organized, I'd be like, go to our website to see what this mouse is.
I know.
But
if you download our app, you can watch the photos show up in real time.
Yeah,
but that's not who we are.
That's not. We are not Audio Chuck Productions.
No.
So anyway.
What's another good experience? Our Valentine's presents.
Yeah, we all got each other presents for Valentine's Day.
Really fun. Cracker and I felt like parents on Christmas Eve, getting our presents together, giggling, you know?
Yeah, we stayed up late at night watching Virgin Suicides. and taking our little Target gifts and putting them in pink bags for everybody. That was really wonderful. And Gypsy, who was on the podcast last week, she also got gifts for everyone in little bags.
And decorated the bus with little, like, Valentine's stickies, which was really special.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Yeah. And the shows have been cool. Like, being a Pacific Northwest girl, I am biased, but I thought that the Portland and Seattle shows were so fun, with the audience just screaming and having a good time. And Salt Lake was wonderful. I felt like I really let loose and wandered off script. And then Chicago was absolutely unhinged. But the show ended up, like, in the second act especially, being really, really special. So I don't know. I've loved this whole thing. And if you're listening, you can join in on this ever-evolving experience, because as you're listening right now, there are still tickets available in Boston, DC, Birmingham, New Orleans, Dallas, Houston, Austin, and Cleveland. So just go to shesawomantour.com, get your tickets right there, and you can join us. And I can say, honestly, every single night is different.
Yeah, we're reaching that halfway point in the tour where everyone on the whole crew gets sort of loopy.
Loopy is the exact word. Anyway, Caitlin, I want to dive right into our weekly interview, which is the meat and not the potatoes of the occasion. But first, I have a little treat for you. Every week, we do a segment called Here's the Good News, where we share positive stories torn from the headlines. The idea is that they'll bring you, our listeners, a little hope during these difficult times. And this week, our news is all about our furry family members.
Aww.
Yes. Now, we've been slogging through this podcast for over a year, and if you're an avid listener, there's no way you've missed out on the fact that Caitlin is a fan of dogs.
Yep.
She loves them.
And all animals.
And all animals, yes. You do. You like raccoons. Cats.
Uh-huh.
But I think that dogs
they have a special place in my heart.
So it's no surprise that today we're bringing you another story about these four-footed friends. A story about dogs in Spain, to be exact. And Caitlin sourced this very important article.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so here's the good news. As of this year, Spain's legal system is considering a pet's welfare, a dog's welfare, when couples divorce or break up, just as we consider a child's welfare in that situation. Let me explain. Instead of treating a dog as a piece of property that troubled couples can battle over, courts will decide which owner will take better care of the dog, which home will give a healthier, happier life to the dog. So they're thinking about dogs the way they think about family members or children now, not just like a desk or something that the couple can argue over, but they're going to be like, okay, what's going to make the dog healthiest and happiest, and where would he want to be, or she?
It's about time.
Yeah, I think it's really incredible that that hasn't been the case all along.
I know. I mean, I feel like anyone that's around our age has probably watched a couple either get divorced or just get a dog together and then break up.
Yep.
And then one side never sees the dog or cat or whatever again.
Yeah.
I feel like I've witnessed a lot of stories. And I've also seen people being like, oh, now that we're broken up, I don't care about the dog anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or people that are like, I don't care about the dog, but I'm not letting him have it, you know?
Right, right. So I just think, I don't know, it's good that there's some sort of law in place in Spain. I feel like it should be, they really are family members.
Yeah. According to Reuters, the decision follows similar moves in France and Portugal and obliges judges to consider pets as sentient beings, a trend that was already underway before the law was passed. In October, a Madrid judge gave joint custody of a dog to an unmarried couple who sought a court ruling on whom the pet should stay with after they separated. The dog spends a month with each of them, and they are both legally responsible.
I think that's such a good idea. That way the dog gets to see both of his owners. They just love their owners. They don't know what's going on, you know?
They don't understand.
Yeah, they don't understand a breakup.
Anyway, I love this story because it follows a number of stories we have shared about animal rights and about how animals are being viewed more and more as sentient, feeling creatures. Mm-hmm. To nerd out a little bit, this reminds me of an essay I read by Martha Nussbaum about human rights, where she essentially said, hey, if we really want a happy world, will consider the rights of all things, animals, trees, heritage sites, because the more respect we give to the things around us, the better our situation will be.
And I feel like you really connect to the part where she's also thinking about the trees.
She's thinking about the trees.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're thinking about dogs, I'm thinking about trees.
Exactly.
And my little Polaroids. Thank you for that good news story, Caitlin. It makes me really happy. Anyway, enough of that. Let's take a little cuteness break. Okay, we're back. Now, before we continue, let me say this. If you enjoy your time with us today, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. We love reviews. In fact, we love them so much, we're going to read some of our favorite reviews at the end of the show. So submit them, and we will read them. It'll be a great time. It'll be like a free cameo where we're talking back at you, you know?
I know. I hope we have a new one today. We might not.
Oh, we definitely do. I feel like we have scads of them.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
But right now, it's time for us to do our interview. So last week, at the end of our interview with our tour manager, Gypsy, we had a stroke of genius, Caitlin.
Yes.
We decided to do a series where we interviewed all the incredible women on our touring team. And today, I'm pleased to bring you part two in this new series that we've created because we're going to be talking to Audrey Finney, our marketing guru. To say that she is just a marketer would be an understatement. She has spent the majority of her life traveling the world, listening to music, and telling people why they should too. She's a branding brainiac with a knack for artistic organization and controlled chaos, as she puts it. She has organized countless tours and events. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. Hello, Audrey. Thank you for joining me in my luxury hotel room in Columbus, Ohio.
It is incredible. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm glad you are because you are stuck with us now.
Here we are.
So
captive
just
audience.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. She has no choice. She's on payroll. Just set the scene and tell me, how are you? What are you up to today? Like, what's life like right now?
Well, you know, it's pretty peachy. We are in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
so it's glamorous.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm feeling really nice. We have a day off. I have some time to organize some chaos.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Feeling pretty good.
And we'll talk about what your chaos organizing looks like bit later. We're going to talk about what a day in the life of Audrey is. But for context, also, I feel like we should set the scene. Audrey has feathers in her hair and mismatched earrings, and she's wearing a beautiful robe, and she looks like that aunt that just came back from Thailand
yes.
and has gifts for everyone, as she put it.
Or I'm living on a tour bus and I couldn't find any of my things.
Oh.
I just wore like 10 different things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All of the necklaces, all of the earrings and rings. Caitlin and I have been talking. We're like, we really want to have a good ring game like Audrey does.
The ring game is important. I always try to find... These have come from like different places all over.
Yeah.
I just pick one up and I'm like, does it match my aesthetic? Okay, we'll take it. I'll find a finger for it. I'll find a toe for it. We're here.
That's perfect. Okay, we're learning, Caitlin, bit by bit from the experienced roadies. So with that in mind, I'm wondering, you're like me, a lot of your work has to do with touring and moving around, and I was wondering, what was it like going through the pandemic when touring wasn't possible at all? Did you go crazy?
Almost.
Yeah.
So it actually happened that March, I broke my ankle, so...
Wait, how did you break your ankle?
I fell off my Clydesdale.
Oh my God!
It was a don't mix wine and horseback riding incident.
I don't understand how those two could not go well together.
I was hanging out with my mom, which is always a whole thing, and I got a little excited and didn't make it all the way onto my horse and accidentally kicked her in the behind, and she said, "Okay, let's go." So, what would normally be a not too bad of a fall was like a 6.5 foot fall from a Clydesdale. So the Budweiser horse broke my ankle.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've ridden horses before, but I've never ridden a Clydesdale. They're massive.
She's huge. She's
yeah.
a big girl, but she's very sweet.
What's her name?
Bronte.
Bronte. Charlotte.
Brontesaurus.
Oh, Brontesaurus.
And Charlotte
okay.
Bronte, yes.
Yeah.
So many references. We love a good, you know,
yeah.
portmanteau.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
so yes, I had just broken my ankle. when they announced that, and I was already stressed about going on tour with a not great ankle.
Yeah.
And they had announced that all of our tours, which I think was one of yours, mm-hmm. had been rescheduled.
Yeah.
With no... not sure where it's going to go. So yeah. I was sitting on the couch with a broken ankle and my career had seemingly come to a screaming halt and yeah. I was in a very weird place. But after a few weeks of kind of having an existential crisis,
yeah.
I picked up a lot of like online vintage shopping and kind of clothing resale and restoration. So I started purchasing a lot of fun vintage clothes and jewelry and started learning how to repair them and clean them and resell them on the internet. So
yeah.
that was one thing I did to kind of help myself do something with my hands because I need a task at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a good thing that came out of it. But that's really how I kept busy.
Yeah.
But all I can say other than that is I'm very happy to be back on the road.
Yeah. I've noticed that you pick things up from vintage shops and sew and repair them and bring them into your wardrobe, which is very eclectic.
Yes.
How do you know when you see an item that's going to be yours? Because that's another thing we were talking about. I'll go into a vintage shop, look at all the clothes, and be like, I don't know. They all look ugly to me. But then I think there are people that can pick out a piece that's ugly and then make it work as part of a look.
Oh,
like,
yes.
How do you know when you have a find?
Well, I just kind of have always been a fixer
yeah.
with people and clothes, I guess.
Oh, yay. What a fun job.
Yay. Love it. So for a long time, I didn't buy fun, kind of what is normally considered eclectic or different clothing. I would just go to thrift stores and try to find like the best tag, but it wasn't always cool or I didn't always like it. It wasn't really kind of a timeless fun item that spoke to me. I just thought that maybe I could resell this for a good amount of money. And I don't know when the shift happened. Maybe it was just years of working in entertainment and having to make things work just in general. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to dress how I feel on the inside because I spent the longest time in high school trying to fit in and trying to kind of like conform. But then I found, I think it was like a fun silk robe or something. And I was like, I'm going to start wearing lingerie in public.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I got a really good response. And we all love when people are like, oh my God, I love that. Where did
yeah.
you get it? And I'm like, ooh, a Goodwill in Ohio.
Yeah, for sure.
So I just kind of started listening to my fun, eclectic, drunk aunt.
Okay.
On the inside.
On the inside, yeah. Bringing her out.
Yes.
You know, we talked to the owner of Butch Wax Vintage, and she has the most amazing philosophy around clothes. It's very similar to yours. It's all about finding what expresses you and not what makes other people happy. And I think that a lot of times when I hear people talking about clothes, they're like, you have to check for what's in right now, or you have to check what is going to impress people, or look for that label, right? And then she turns it upside down. She's like, no, it should come from who you are, and you match it to that, which is clearly something you're good at. So
yes. The less, like, normal people that hit on me in public, the better.
Yeah!
I just want to set their expectations. Like,
right.
listen, this is weird, so get
yeah.
with it.
You're like, weirdos, here I am. I'm flying my weirdo flag. So, having said all of that, I want to take a moment to do my favorite part of the interview, which is where I press rewind. Caitlin's back there like, press rewind. And kind of talk about your early years, because I understand that you were raised by two whimsical artists.
Oh, yes.
As you put it. And I want to know what your early years were like with them and how they kind of shaped you.
Oh my gosh, okay. My mom will love this. She'll love that I'm talking about her.
Yes, Jewish mothers
yeah.
love to be talked about. Yeah.
yeah, so I am a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
But first and foremost, I was raised by some like very crunchy artist types.
Yeah.
But my mom did not always come from that background. My grandparents were, we don't hug, we're kind of like very straight-laced and
yeah.
always very disappointed and
yeah.
you know, that whole thing. So when, of course, my my mom was much younger when she met my dad. My dad had already been married and divorced and had moved from England to Virginia Beach to become a professional surfer.
Okay.
Wow. He decided that was a thing, that he was gonna get, like, I think that at the time they were drafting people from Europe for Vietnam and they were offering citizenship. So I think somehow he was like, this will be worth it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So after many long, crazy, wild stories, he ended up in Virginia Beach, became a surfer, I think was like growing weed and being a hippie. Met my mom at a bar and stole her from his friend. And I think that is how she was like, oh my gosh. So it already started kind of wild and crazy.
Yeah.
But he was an artist and a very free spirit. And I think that he definitely pushed my mom to feel that way about herself and kind of come out of the shell she'd put herself in growing up in a family that was a bit like restrictive. So they bought a farm on the eastern shore of Virginia, which is like a tiny peninsula that sticks off of Maryland.
Yeah.
And they got horses and chickens and built a shop, like a studio situation. Mm-hmm. My dad is a carver and antique restoration artist, and my mom is a painter. So yeah, it kind of works out. They've taught each other a lot, and so they work together every day, which is absolutely wild to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That they can do that and not kill each other.
Right. Yeah.
It was always like some art project or some, oh, let's build it, let's do it ourselves, let's figure it out. I don't know, Audrey, look it up, figure it out. And so I was just like, okay, I'm just going to learn and I'm just going to do what I see every day. So both my sister and I kind of came out very artistically inclined, and she is an incredible artist. She's a much better like drawer and painter than I am, but I suppose I kind of went off on the other realm of things and did music and entertainment. So they definitely had a direct effect on where both my sister and I are now artistically in our careers. Which is really cool.
Yeah.
I feel super blessed that I had like a support system like that, that encouraged me to be in theater and be in public speaking and, you know, do music. And my dad wasn't thrilled about it, but tour with bands and things like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Growing up like that was super helpful in, you know, shaping who I am and what I do. I know a lot of people later in life are like, you know what, I can do whatever I want. And I'm like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, my dad, I'm like, no, it's okay. You're an adult human now. So I'm just very lucky to have that. So
you said that they allowed you to wear whatever hat you wanted to.
Oh yes,
literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And you are a hat lady.
I am a hat lady
still, so we see that. That's the environment that I grew up in too, with my mother, because she is a painter and she lives in her art studio, and she always encouraged my sister and I to figure out how to make the things that we liked. So if we went to a museum and we saw something, or we went to a store and saw an item of clothing that we liked, she'd be like, let's figure out how to make it at home. And she kind of told us that anything we wanted to do, we could do it. So I think that having that, if you have that and you're listening to this, you're so lucky. If you don't, try to make it for yourself. Tell yourself that you can do whatever you want and that you can make whatever you want, because it's very freeing and you never know what skill you have like locked inside yourself. So when did you discover that you were in love with music, and how did that come about?
We were living in Virginia Beach and we moved to this smaller community very, very early in my life. Mm. So when I was growing up in an extremely rural place, the only like thing to do was a McDonald's, and, we would go to shows, local shows that we created ourselves, like in high school, and it came during the emo era.
Yeah.
I was an emo gal. I had the hair and like the
You had the hair, the bangs,
the duck butt haircut, right? Yeah. When you like cut it all off in the back and like floof it up with hairspray.
Yes. Oh my god, I forgot.
I have photos. I don't want people to go digging for them. Yeah. I think I've gotten them all off the internet. I don't know. You guys did a pretty good job digging,
about the duck butt haircut. Yeah.
So I had the duck butt haircut. And we would go to these local shows and we would have them in garages or like basements or wherever. Mm-hmm. And I would just meet all these people that I didn't realize felt the same way that I did. So initially it was very much about the music, but then I started meeting these people and felt finally a sense of community because I was a total nerd in middle school and high school and everyone thought I was a weirdo because I did theater and just all of that. So I was struggling heavily with that, heavily with my identity. I was wearing like Hot Topic black clothes and things like that, which that I still do, you know, but make it fashion.
Right.
So that was kind of how it happened. And then as I started to learn more about different genres, I felt appreciation for different types of music. And my mom was like a Bob Dylan girl and a Led Zeppelin girl and, you know, stuff like that. My dad was like, whatever, you guys do whatever you want. I'll listen to whatever you play, you know? But my mom definitely had, she would play Eric Clapton and all these musicians that otherwise a 10, 11, 12 year old wouldn't necessarily be like, I want to buy this CD.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was into that, but then I also had my emo friends and my hardcore music and stuff like that. But I felt like that kind of started to early shape the horizon that I had on music.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I just like thought the people were so cool. Yeah. I just wanted to be a rock star so bad.
Yeah. And wait, so how did that evolve into touring?
Oh, well, that was mainly was the people, you know. I wanted to see what I could do to get to where they are, because of course I was already a drama queen. I was on the stage, I was doing theater, I was doing public speaking. And so I'd go to these shows and eventually we would be able in a community to like book touring bands, but it was, you know, small regional, and I would just meet them and I would bug them like to no end. And this was kind of, I mean, we had MySpace, but it was definitely way before we were able to so immediately reach out to the people we thought were famous and cool and interesting and we wanted to talk to. So I would hit them up on MySpace, or I would just go to the show and be like, who's your manager? Like, who's your boss though? Like, who's the boss? Because I want to talk to them. And I need to know, like, how to do this. I want to do. And so eventually I just bugged people enough. And they were like, fine, do my merch for me, I guess. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I did a lot of free merch gigs. And I started working for a music video producer. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of really horror-based, like, special effects, because I think that was his first love. So when he got into music, he started doing heavy metal bands. So we're doing these goth music videos with, like, blood splattered everywhere. Yeah. And he was like, Audrey, go get the fake blood. And I was like, yes, anything to just, like, be in this music industry. Yeah. And so that was just, like, I would do all these odd eclectic jobs with like local venues and local music video producers and local bands and try to get merch gigs. So I just kind of worked my way up and I networked and I just annoyed people until they gave me jobs.
Yeah. And then you studied mass communication and marketing at Old Dominion University.
Oh my gosh. So. I always, sorry, alma mater, ODU, but I have to say that the kind of the footwork I did in life with music was way more valuable in the
end. Wait a second, that's so funny because my next question was, do you feel like you learned more out there in the world than you did?
I was like, sorry, I have nothing to say about college.
I was like, intuitively. That's a good thing because we were kind of talking about this with Gypsy, where it's like a lot of people should go to college and a lot of people aren't ready, and that's okay.
Right.
And so you should do what you want to do, not feel pressured from the outside, just like with your fashion choices.
Oh, yes.
Education choices are the same thing. If you feel like you're ready for college and it's going to do something great for you, do it. But if you feel like now is not the right moment or it's not going to do something for you, you can hold off and like wait to the right time.
Yeah. And I think that the reason, I mean, I just didn't at the time know what I wanted. So in the early 2000s, it was still very prevalent that that was the life path
for
a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I graduated in 2008 and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to school. Initially, I wanted to do theater. I went to school. I got a scholarship. So of course, my parents were like, obviously go to the place where we don't have to pay a bunch of money for you to go. Mm-hmm. And once I was there, I mean, not that the school that, I mean, that's a great school, but it's not an art school. It's not a theater school.
Right.
So I ended up kind of making my own study and like path, which I almost always do.
Right.
Exactly. Really rubs people the wrong way sometimes. I eventually was like, listen, this is what I want to do. And my counselor was like, what?
Yeah.
It's just not really like a prevalent thing where I'm from. So really doing more footwork in the industry and kind of making stuff up as I go along in the end turned out to be more valuable than what I learned in school.
Yeah.
However, on the other side of the coin, I will say that I have worked some corporate jobs with like theaters that are owned by corporations, or like, for instance, I ran a venue that was attached to a restaurant that was a local chain. They had like a couple locations, so they kind of ran it more corporate. So I like having that on my resume that I did go to college, I think appeals to some of the people that are like-minded, that think that college is important.
Mm-hmm.
However, what got me the job ultimately was having the experience.
Yeah.
And they were like, wow, this is really different. And what? Tell me about that. Like, tell me about being on tour. Like, what is that like? And I'm like, honestly, it's more stressful than a 9-to-5 and I'm dealing with 15 things all at once.
Right.
And that's what makes me a great candidate. And they were like, okay. So there is two sides to the coin, except I do not support like going into debt for like years and years for school when there are a ton of opportunities for you to kind of get the footwork locally before you commit to something that will put you into debt.
Do you feel like it was harder breaking into the industry and the field you wanted to do work in because you're a woman?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, right. Absolutely.
Do you have feelings?
Yes. So I thankfully will say that either I did not experience some of the more jarring and terrible things that some of my girlfriends have, or my trauma brain has blocked them out, but
yay trauma brain.
Yeah. However, I think that we all that came up, I'll call it the Warped Tour era, because that is kind of when the breakthrough came that women, I mean, of course there were women in every decade that have worked in the industry, some like extremely incredible tour managers and extremely incredible agents that were women. But I think there was a mass influx of women because of the Warped Tour and the emo era.
Yeah.
Because that music did appeal to a lot of us at that age and it made it more reachable with social media.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of like a mix of a lot of things that caused us to be like, oh my God, I could do this. I know this guy who's in a band that's doing really well right now. I'll just hit him up or whatever. And there were girls in every state that felt that way. So, like, I remember the year I was on Warped Tour that there were no girls on it. And then the next summer, it was just, like, so many merch girls.
Yeah,
and
ladies.
It was just, I mean, it was great and I loved it. But I just saw so much change. And there was, like, a lot of really uncomfortable stuff happening. But at the time, we weren't, society or like the industry in general was not paying attention to that.
Right.
So we were made to feel like, oh, well, you know, boys will be boys and stuff like that. So while there was like a lot of terrible things happening, I wouldn't say that it was on the forefront of that. So people kept coming and girls kept coming into the industry. And then fast forward to now, it is harder, I think, for women because the people that were in that industry that saw all that happen, it caused a lot of problems for a lot of labels and a lot of management and a lot of, you know, and so unfortunately they're like, well, but we're going to
no more ladies.
Yeah, we're going to ease up on having women because it just causes problems. And now, thankfully...
those women were causing trouble by being there.
Right? Yeah.
It's their fault.
Oh, my God. Their shoulder was out. I just, you know, they couldn't help themselves, okay? Right. So there was a lot of that. And I think when being the age I am now and looking back, being like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was so problematic. And I just can't believe that was happening.
Yeah.
But I will say I learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of us did. And, you know, my heart breaks that a lot of girls who had a ton of potential left the music industry because they felt uncomfortable or wronged.
Yeah.
But now with the new movement of, you know, on like... social media can obviously be a terrible, awful thing, but it can also do a lot of great things, like bring light to things that are happening. So while it was really tough, and the fact that it gave me like super strong skin and now I get through days much easier in the industry, I think that it's a good sign that slowly we are paying more attention to things like that. But it was definitely hindering.
Yeah.
But it was definitely... ultimately made me stronger.
Right. And just to clarify for everyone, we do laugh now at some things like this, but we're laughing because it's so absurd and it's so horrible.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Like, to put women in that position and then blame them for the position that they're in is really, it's a really dark thing. And I'm glad that we're seeing an environment now, at least on this tour, where you have a lot of women working and they're heard and respected. And I hope that that just spreads out and that this moment where you're saying light is being shed on the things that we need to see, I think that's going to, or I hope that's going to help change that situation.
Yes.
I really do. And you mentioned that you're like nose to the grindstone all the time. And I see you tippy-tapping away around the clock. And just for our listeners, especially our young listeners, what is a day in the life like for you on this particular tour? I know you wear different hats for every tour, but what is it that you're doing over there? Because we want to know.
Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of work that actually goes into organizing a tour ahead of time.
Yeah.
Which didn't always get done when I was doing band stuff.
Right.
So when I was a younger tour manager on the road, I didn't realize until I met older tour managers that knew what was going on, that eventually, like, I learned all the turning wheels, which made me a better tour manager now.
Yeah.
So basically about a month before, we lay out everything. We lay out all of the dates and plan out, just to ensure that to the best of our ability, nothing is going to surprise us.
Yeah.
The less surprises, the better.
Yeah.
But of course, Murphy's Law always happens. And if something can go wrong, it absolutely will. So my job is to basically ensure that there are the least amount of moments that could happen.
Yeah.
So once we get on the road, of course, things start to change. Things change all the time. Hotel rates change all the time. Availability of Ubers or buses or any kind of travel change, especially in a post-pandemic world. So managing a tour is kind of a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
Just because once I put data into our planning app, whatever it is we're using at the time, obviously right now we're using Master Tour. We love you.
Which is great, Master Tour. We love it.
Thank you, Master Tour.
Master Tour is basically, just for you that are listening, it's an app that I can open on my phone and know when we're arriving where, how long it's going to take us, are we going to have food, when do we get into the venue, when do we leave the venue, all of that. It's like... and that's all on your end. You put it in so that I can see.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that has not always been a thing. So there, you see, I still print out paper day sheets, which is basically our itinerary every day.
Yeah.
And when we're touring with people, when there's 20 to 25 people on a tour, that becomes very helpful that everyone can pull it up on their phone.
Right.
And see what's happening. But since it is a live, living, breathing thing, I have to make sure that every day we have the correct information in there. So yeah. We as a team are kind of going back and forth, touching with Jeremy, who's covering a lot of the production and the tech, and touching with Gypsy, who handles a lot of the logistics, a lot of the parking, mm-hmm. you know, when you're traveling with a bus, and then me, and I go in and I'm like, okay, well, let me double check everybody's brain. Oh, this person from this venue emailed me but didn't copy the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure the rest of the team gets all that information.
Yeah.
So it's constantly always monitoring that, and then plus planning for everything we have coming up as well, because when things start bumping up right after one another,
yeah.
you're like, oh, I can finally rest. But no, I can't, because right. we still have more, which is a good sign. And,
yeah.
you know, again, I'll take it from sitting on the couch with a broken ankle with no tours
yeah.
to having too much to do.
Yeah.
So that's basically staying organized, overseeing, and just always like monitoring changes. So I am the barrier between the talent and the problem.
Yeah.
And that makes sure that, you know, we take care of it as a team before it even trickles down. Because once it starts to trickle down, then chaos ensues.
Right. And yeah, for our listeners, just to kind of put this in your mind a little bit, if that job is not being done, if Audrey's job is not being done, it stands in the way of us being able to use the bathroom because yes. there's no water on the bus, or we don't get food, we're hungry. Or the bus driver is exhausted because he's been driving for like 40 hours without a break, mm-hmm. or like those are very real things. It's not just about like making sure that all my plates are pink in my dressing room, or do you know
and
what
the
I mean?
Red Bull's on the stage.
Yeah, the Red Bull's on the stage, which is important.
Very
but it's
important.
Like it's like basic stuff like eating and sleeping and pooping and all of that stuff. We couldn't do it without someone there to make sure that that happens.
I will always facilitate a poop.
Yeah, and believe me, they have been facilitated well on this tour. I think it's so amazing because your brain works in a way that mine does not. I am a total space cadet, and so it is amazing to have someone on the other side making sure that I'm brought back down to earth at least once a day to do a show.
Of course.
What I want to know is, after this tour, what's next for you? And I don't just mean what's the next tour. I mean, what's something that you want to do in your life? Like another step that you want to take?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have daily existential crises. So
right.
let's just start with that.
Okay, good. Because Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah. Anxiety. It comes with the territory
yeah.
and we love it.
Yeah.
It's who we are. So I was thinking my latest this morning was maybe like eccentric art teacher.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, long term. I think that it's become, my vision has definitely changed and always molded with each year that I'm alive
right.
and that I interact with the world. And I do love touring, and the new genre that I am in, of course, drag. And honestly, I've met so many like beautiful burlesque dancers and like artists that I have never interacted with before,
yeah.
which I think opens up even a new path. I mean, I thought I was just going to be in bands and rock and roll forever, which
yeah.
I would probably look like Steven Tyler at this point by now if I had, but we're still keeping the wardrobe, but we're working on the face, okay? So, you know, and then next thing I knew, like, we're doing drag. I got glitter. I got feathers around me at all times, and
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I have hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I can breathe.
Yeah.
I'm complimented every day. It's a beautiful world.
Yeah.
So that even opens up a whole new world for me.
Yeah.
So if I'm not touring, then I could, obviously my first love was marketing, and
yeah.
I love selling people things. You know what I mean? I like, if I love it, I want to tell people about it. And
yeah.
that's basically how that started. So I'm super grateful for coming into this world because so many outlets aren't being used. And I now am like becoming hyper-focused on making sure that people know how much this is incredible.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to market this. Like,
yeah.
let's make shirts, let's make pins, let's
mm-hmm.
do all these projects and things mm-hmm. like that. So, you know, I started this year touring, tour
mm-hmm.
brain, tour focused, which
yeah.
of course I still love, but now there's all these other fun things that could possibly develop out of doing this new thing.
Yeah.
So ultimately, not necessarily a goal for a career, but more so to continue to learn and be able to create and make people excited about things that are not only things that I love, but also I'd like to think incredibly good for the world and incredibly inclusive for the world and opening up people's minds that may be living in a home with parents that don't necessarily support their loves and their passions, and making that available because they can come and chat with you and take a photo with you and be like, oh my God, this person is doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I talk to Dre about this all the time, our amazing merch girl, by the way.
Yes.
And she's like, I love to talk to people and tell them that, and you can too, you know, because like, we're not special. We just, we're weirdos that wanted to do something.
Yeah.
So honestly, I mean, ultimately when I'm like 65, I want to be an eccentric art teacher or something, but until then I'm open to interpretation.
Yeah. I love that. And that's another important thing for people to hear, that who you are and what you're doing is constantly evolving. You never have to make a final decision, because if you're living life right, you should be influenced by the things that are passing your way. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. Just like you pick up rings that make sense for
you,
you're going to pick up influences that make sense for you along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today. And we mentioned Dre during this interview, and we're going to try to wrangle her and see if we can talk to her. Because these two ladies, Audrey and Dre, are just salt and pepper and yin and yang. And
we're starting a band.
Yeah. They're going to be TikTok sensations. At 32. And they just met on this tour, right?
Yes. Well, I've known her husband for a long time.
Yeah.
A band boy from the past. But I feel like because of social media, we've just known each other for a long time. But we've just met and worked together on this tour. So yeah, I'm not crying. I'm fixing my makeup. For those of you who can't see, I'm like, it's so beautiful. But yeah, she's my gal. She's my homie.
Yep. So thank you. Thank you so much, Audrey. We can't wait to do another 3 weeks with you. And this has been an incredible interview. Okay, Cradalina Gretum, that was our interview for today. Did you enjoy that?
That was a really good one.
It was a really good one. I think it was very informative, especially because you always tell me there's always people asking you, how do you get to tour with famous people?
Yeah. And I feel like her perspective of just like, well, I just went to the shows because I was a fan, and then eventually I just bothered enough people. But it takes years and years. I mean, Audrey's been doing this for 10 plus years, and now she's on tour with drag queens. But I feel like a lot of people ask with the assumption of like, oh, just...
Can I do it tomorrow? I'll meet you tomorrow and we'll go on tour.
Yeah. Should I start my life plan towards this direction now? I'm like, this doesn't really work that way exactly. You know, it's a winding path because it's not in like exactly a traditional career.
And that's definitely what Audrey found, and it was so interesting hearing how her dream sort of developed as she met new people and new situations. Sometimes when you have a very specific idea in mind for what you want out of life, you're not going to get it. But if you pay attention to the signs along the way, you'll find something that really does work for you. So don't keep your focus too narrow, listeners. Remember to keep your heart open to new influences and new things, because that's what Audrey did, and it seems to be really working for her.
Yeah.
And her wardrobe.
Yeah.
Which we're obsessed with.
I know. I'm like, I gotta learn how to dress for tour from her, because she packs really smartly.
One bag.
Right? But like,
and full, all the things.
Full of fashion, but also comfortable outfits to wear. So I'm taking notes, because we are going on tour a lot this year.
Yeah.
Again, finally.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take notes so I can pack a little bit more smartly.
More feathers, Caitlin. I demand more feathers.
Well, okay.
Anyway, let's take a little break. Okay, we're back. Now, first of all, I want to say this again. If you liked your time with us today, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. We love reviews, don't we, Caitlin?
We love them.
In fact, we love them so much, we're going to read some of our favorite reviews right here at the end of the show. So, Caitlin, do you have a favorite review this week?
Yes, I hope I haven't read this one yet.
I don't think you have.
Okay. This one is 5 stars, titled Inspiration in Every Episode, left by Foster's Aunt.
Hello, Foster's Aunt.
Great interviews with inspirational women. Each week, we hear Cracker lead a wonderful interview about new topics with women in new fields. I can't wait to press play on the next episode.
Oh my goodness.
That's a nice one. I haven't read that one, right?
No, you
good.
Not,
yeah,
it's a really nice one. Because I remember Foster's Aunt.
Yeah.
That's a nice review.
That's a really good one.
And 5 stars. Our addiction.
Yes. We yes. So please, yeah. rate and yeah. review.
If you don't have anything to say, just give us 5 stars.
Yeah,
we'll
appreciate that too.
Yeah. But enough of that. Caitlin, it's time for the credits. This podcast was produced by Caitlin Gredham, and then I did it. The cast includes me and also Caitlin. And it is distributed by the amazing Studio 71. So thank you for joining us today. Make sure to tune in next Monday for another exciting episode. And remember, if you ever feel down, all you have to do is look in the mirror and say,
"She's a woman!"
And I'll be with you. I feel like we've really gotten into a rhythm with these podcasts, Caitlin.
I know, by some miracle.
Yeah, and we only have like 40 more to do.
Yeah, God, okay, yeah.